some people travel with me, and I'm not homeless. That's what you're wrong. I'm not homeless. This is my mother earth. This is my home.
Yeah.
I'm not homeless. This is my home, mother earth.
House
is and God, if this says you're a hot copy breaking the law, I need a ticket for sleeping. There's no law against sleeping. How can I be breaking the law when I'm asleep?
Hello?
I'm trying to sleep. How can I be breaking the law?
You had a bad dream.
Come on, yeah. I was dreaming I was breaking the law or something, man.
You had a bad dream.
I went to a coffee house the other night, and these people would not let me eat in the coffee house because I was homeless, because I had my sleeping bag with me. I had $100 in my pocket. But I could not eat because I was homeless. That's discrimination, man.
I'm Lee Boland, and the song that I just wrote especially for this occasion, I had to dedicate this to our mayor. You sleep, the sleep begins. You wake to threats of violence. It's a matrix. The cops will clear the park and rush to take your shopping cart. It's a matrix. Without a place to live, to pee. Fascistic laws make it a crime for you to be. When Willie first began, he promised us a wonderland, not the matrix. Explain this reign of terror that remains, it's a matrix. Why does he tell us now that all these things that happen no longer do? When in the streets we see matrix happening to me and you.
And you're listening to Bathrob Spear's Broadsides, the canned version. This is Bathrob Spear Robert Norse. It's May 10th, 1996, at our new studios in Free Radio Santa Cruz. Or I should say, this tape is at the new studios, because due to moving problems, lack of a phone line, and what I believe is a little bit of internal paranoia, the studio is not quite yet ready for prime time. And so you're hearing me on a recorded tape, but hopefully the flip side of this, the positive side, is that there'll be more time for me to pass on to you the very interesting recordings, conversations, and some analysis of what's going on here in Santa Cruz and up in San Francisco and other places in this country regarding the rights of homeless people in the last week or two, and also get you up to date by passing on some tapes that I've made but have been unable to play because of lack of time. There's going to be more time in the next few days here because the station isn't able to accommodate its programmers at the moment, and we are subjecting you all to endless loop tapes of what in my mind are unintelligible and brain-destructive music. I'm going to attempt to season the situation a bit with some conversations, interviews, and analysis. So you're tuned to 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz, in Santa Cruz at its new location. There is no call-in for the time being, but hopefully by Monday, May 13th, you'll be able to call in at 427-3772. That's not today, but Monday, May 13th, and thereafter. Not sure, only time will tell, but this is a community station at the most basic level, and we work through volunteer efforts. So let's be patient. If you have some thoughts that you wish to pass on to the public, or questions, or criticism, after hearing this broadcast, or any part of it, you can give me a call at 423-4833, and record a message of any length on my message tape, and I will pass on that information to the public at my next show, 10 to 12, Monday, May 13th. I should tell you that that show may be my last, at least my last live show for quite a period of time, because on May 16th, I will be going to court to a sentence modification hearing in San Francisco. Now, I've talked about this in the past. In 1993, I was serving food with San Francisco Food Not Bombs, an anti-hunger organization up there, which was being arrested almost daily by the San Francisco Police Department, then pressed by Mayor Juggernaut Jordan to institute the Matrix Quality of Life program, which was clearing homeless people away from downtown, compacting their property, sending them to jail for victimless, innocent behavior necessary to maintaining survival in an urban environment, such as sleeping, sitting, covering up with bedding, having a tent, or protection against the elements, and so forth. So, Food Not Bombs, which has over the years received over 1,100 arrests, received my help when I came north with other Santa Cruzans to support Food Not Bombs. And the history of this is that Food Not Bombs, when we here in Santa Cruz were being arrested in 1989, serving food at the town clock in front of City Hall in order to protest troll busting and the sleeping ban then, as well as simply to feed people, because in those days there was no free meal. Indeed, out of our protest efforts came Karen Gillette's Homeless Community Resource Center Day Meal, as well as various other programs. When we were doing those protests here in Santa Cruz in the late 80s, I say, San Francisco's Food Not Bombs, including Keith McHenry and others, came down to help us and risked arrest with us to make sure that people got the food, that poverty was made visible, that protest against unjust laws here and horrific violent practices by the police department and other unofficial people was made public. So we returned the favor, and when Food Not Bombs in San Francisco came under increasing attack under the Jordan administration, Mayor Frank Jordan, former police chief, when he instituted a reign of terror against the homeless, or actually just stepped up the previous reign of terror, we went north. And many people were arrested, as I say, over 1,100 since 1988, and I was one of those. Now, what happened then was an interesting story. All previous arrests for what's called contempt of court, for violating the court order barring Food Not Bombs in San Francisco from serving free food, all previous arrests eventually resulted in dismissals, not because anything was really taken through the court system, but because of the practice of the DA not to file charges and risk a trial, or perhaps not to commit public resources to that situation. The cases taken closest to trial prior to my case were those of Keith McHenry, or Katzenjammer Keith, as I call him, for his lighthearted and mischievous attitude, and that of Sarah Menifee, a woman who served free food essentially with Homes Not Jails and other demonstration situations which Food Not Bombs supported, who was arrested and taken to, well, closer to trial than any case had been since then. Keith McHenry was actually taken to a superior court and accused of contempt, and he won that hearing in 1991, the judge finding that since the permit process for a park permit necessary to getting a health permit in San Francisco had been discontinued the year before in the summer of 1990 by action by the Park Commission, in our opinion, an action taken specifically to put Food Not Bombs in a permitless position after it had obtained a health permit early in 1990. Since there was no permit process, the judge ruled in the case of Keith McHenry, he could not be found guilty of violating a court order since it wasn't possible to meet the requirements of that court order. The history of Food Not Bombs in San Francisco is a bizarre, colorful, and extremely strange one. Food Not Bombs served food for about half a year in San Francisco from late 1987 to the summer of 1988 under both Mayor Feinstein and then new Mayor Agnos without any problems. It was, ironically, when they applied for a permit to serve food, some of the Food Not Bombs members feeling that they should, quote, be completely legal, unquote, that they got into real trouble. In the summer of 1988, Mayor Art Agnos, under pressure from conservatives in the Haight-Ashbury's Coal Valley Improvement District, and Haight-Ashbury Improvement District, merchants and lawyers who wanted to drive so-called hippies out of the area and felt that Food Not Bombs' feeding operations were simply encouraging them, got the police department to begin arrests of Food Not Bombs. And the arrests began with as few as 8 people. The next time they came with 27, took 27 away. Then it heightened to over 50. And at this point, Mayor Agnos saw that the arrests were producing more support for Food Not Bombs and larger demonstrations in its favor and more people willing to go to jail. And a long process of negotiation took place when eventually, in 1989, temporary health permits began to be granted. But every time a temporary health permit was granted, new conditions were added, and indeed internal memos between the health department and the mayor's office or the police department show such statements as, well, we've made up as many new regulations as we can to stop Food Not Bombs. We're kind of stuck. What do we do next? So the whole thing seemed to be something of a political process wherein the health department, the mayor's office, and the police department, as well as Parks and Rec, were uniting in a political action to eliminate Food Not Bombs from the scene through a combination of bureaucratic obstruction, police harassment, a phony media blitz, and so forth. Anyway, by 1990, I believe Food Not Bombs had acquired health permit, food permit, I think they had $1 million insurance policy as required, and there were other permits that the city was trying to throw at them as necessary requirements, like a fire permit, I believe. But Food Not Bombs was continuing to serve, and it was only, as I said, through the abolition of the park permit process by abrupt action in the Parks and Rec Commission in the summer of 1990 that the entire permit action really became moot, because no organization which served free food in the parks was thereafter allowed to do so. That is to say, there was no permit process possible to get a permit. Police, of course, ignored favored people such as Frank Jordan when he had his Franks for Frank rallies in the park, his political rallies in different parks in the city. He was never required to get a permit. So Food Not Bombs in San Francisco continued to serve food nightly in downtown San Francisco at Civic Center Plaza and out in the Haight at lunch. And Food Not Bombs continued to be harassed and arrested, its food dumped into the streets, its pots and cooking equipment confiscated, its members arrested. But no arrests were taken to trial. Members were simply accused of violating a court order, taken away in handcuffs, dragged down to the station and possibly down to the Hall of Justice jail, held possibly overnight, and then released, dragged into court after that, because if you don't appear in court, of course, a warrant goes out for your arrest and you can be picked up at any time. And then about 6 months later, after 2 or 3 or 4 of these court appearances, the charges would be dropped. So it was a harassment machine that ran quite smoothly. And Food Not Bombs continued to appeal to the community for more support, and more individuals and volunteers continued to flow in, including members of the religious community, including even a supervisor. Supervisor Terrence Hallinan, who is now district attorney, served free food in order to express their solidarity with Food Not Bombs and what Food Not Bombs was doing, showing how inadequate, hypocritical, and vicious the city administrations were regarding homelessness. Because indeed, it was the homeless who were being harassed, not merely at these meals, but simply where they sat, where they walked, where they tried to sleep throughout the city. And the motivating factor here, of course, was gentrification. Get them out of sight. Get them out of town. Bring in the people with money. Squeeze out the people without. In the case of Sarah Menifee, as I've said, she demanded a speedy jury trial, and as a consequence, after several court appearances, they dropped charges. So I decided to do the same thing, and I
believe it was in January of 1993, I too demanded that they shit or get off the pot, as the saying goes. Try me or drop the charges. I was working then in Santa Barbara as a homeless advocate and did not want to keep making trips up to San Francisco over 300 miles every time they decided they would run us through the court another time, preparatory to dumping us again and then arresting us again. That seemed to me to be a waste of gas, a waste of time, and only encouraging them in illegal practices, harassing people with arrests that never see the light of day in court. Not a proper way to proceed, and not a good example to set. So I did demand a jury trial, and to my surprise, they granted me one. Fruitnot Bomb's attorneys, who had been defending Keith McHenry and other people arrested under Fruitnot Bomb's, did not want to take my case because they felt they had, quote, inadequate time to prepare. And here we see the kind of split that often happens between professionals and activists. The Fruitnot Bomb's attorneys in San Francisco, some of the members of the National Lawyers Guild, are much more radical people, much more committed people to the struggle for homeless rights and the rights of everyone, you would say, including the most poor, than are the attorneys and the lawyer community in Santa Cruz. In Santa Cruz, we have not been able to find attorneys who will take sleeping cases, who will take food cases, who will take violation of civil rights cases. There's very, very few exceptions, and those exceptions are usually overworked and spotty in what they do because of that overwork and because of their other commitments. Here in Santa Cruz, we've had Catnip Kate Wells. Margaret Marr has taken a number of cases as well, some of them to appeal, some of them funded, I believe, or assisted by the American Civil Liberties Union. Very few. The ACLU takes a disgustingly low posture in Santa Cruz, only when you can get national media, for example, around the sitting cases, could we get the ACLU to get off its ass and do anything in Santa Cruz. And what they did wasn't much. You didn't see an injunction applied for down here as you did in Berkeley. You didn't see the ACLU out there on the streets with observers going around assisting and gathering information on this after the original large demonstrations faded. You don't see the ACLU taking a case to court in Santa Cruz around the city's Santa Cruz's sleeping ban. But in San Francisco, the attorneys are connected with Coalition on Homelessness and with Fruitnot Bomb's are more diligent and they're more active. But again, in all cases, they're pretty legalistic. And they realistically assess their chances in court, and their chances are pretty bad. Cases taken to higher courts by San Francisco attorneys have seen incredible roadblocks and bizarre decisions where Keith McHenry has been beaten by police seriously on 6 or 7 occasions, for instance. He's never been able to secure anything like any kind of damages, any kind of compensation, or any kind of injunction on his behalf precluding police from illegal practices. There is a sort of a political ice age up there, a political frozen front regarding any kind of justice for Fruitnot Bomb's. It's an amazing situation. You really have to explore the details of these cases to see the extent of the institutionalized injustice that's going on. So Fruitnot Bomb's attorneys did not want to take my case. They said, we don't have enough time to prepare for this. It'll be a bad precedent if you lose. Just forget it, waive your time, waive your speedy jury trial, and wait, and let them drop the case if they want, and come back to court if you need to, or possibly we'll try to cover your case in court. And I said, no, my practice in Santa Cruz and here is just get these things done, and I believe it'll be salutary, and they'll probably almost 99% chance they'll drop my case like they had every other case. At that time, I think they had 500 or 600 cases, they dropped them all. Well, somebody in the district attorney's office in San Francisco wanted to get me. That may be the paranoid interpretation, although maybe not. I don't think it's paranoid necessarily. Although I have no evidence of that one way or the other, they decided not to drop my case. And they appointed to my case an attorney who had been previously a DA 9 years ago, who hadn't tried a jury trial throughout that decade, who had never had a political case. Her name was Kathleen Umrine. And though she in some respects was well-intentioned, in other respects, she was incompetent. That's my opinion. And she was also unwilling to follow my instructions, particularly in the later stages of the trial, in terms of investigating what the jury had done afterward and its verdict and why they had done it. She simply wanted to get through the case and get it over with. And she had sort of these optimistic notions that you could simply go to the public and say, hey, this man is on trial for serving free food. Isn't this silly? What she didn't understand, and what is hard to understand, but not that hard for those of us who are watching the situation closely, is that you don't have 12 people talking about this issue in a reasonable way in these kinds of juries. What you have are 12 people who are blinkered, hobbled, and locked in a room, and given only the evidence that the judge wants them to see, and told that they must not decide on the basis of their conscience, common sense, or anything else, but on the basis of very narrow interpretation of laws which will be explained to them by attorneys. And the only question is, did this man violate points A, B, C, and D of the court order? They are not told the punishment that I would have gotten and did get. They are not told that they should consider the hunger needs of the homeless in San Francisco and the other lack of other food services and the fact that the police are giving out free eats charts that mention Food Not Bombs and what I was doing to the homeless at the same time as later in the day they're arresting Food Not Bombs food servers. Or rather, they're told that these considerations are irrelevant, and therefore it is their job simply to state, did this person violate the injunction? Not was it right or wrong, not should this be a public policy, not does this violate his basic rights as a human being and as a citizen and as a member of a progressive community in San Francisco, but did this violate the court order? Did he know the court order existed? Did he understand the court order? And was the court order technically valid? These are the only questions that they're impressed to consider. So the jury is put into a very difficult position, and again, they're in a strange setting. They feel they may be threatened with some kind of jail if they don't make the right decision and follow the instructions of the judge to the letter. And also, jurors tend to take a perverse pride in solving what is presented to them as a very narrow technical problem. You're not being asked in a sort of a sloppy way to decide justice. Nah, this is a very craftsmanlike situation. You're a technician here. You're supposed to simply do a very small part. You're a cog in a machine. You do your little part, and you do it well. And there's sort of a professional pride, I guess, that some jurors are encouraged to have and do have. And also, jurors just want to get out of there. Jurors are paid nothing, virtually, and they want to get home to their families, and it's compulsory. You have to be there, or you are theoretically subject to sanctions, and so that's why people do it. So I had a 5-day jury trial, and as I've told the story before, the main witness to the negotiations between the city and Food Not Bombs, Keith McHenry, was jailed on the first. His bail, which had previously been raised by interested people on bogus charges that eventually were reduced, and he went to court 5 times before he got these charges settled. He settled with these charges, which were a whole other story, but essentially involved his giving away literature at City Hall and his being assaulted by different groupies from the mayor, ranging, who was adamantly hostile to McHenry, and who, with the chief of police and the various, and the man who is now deputy chief of police, Richard Holder, who is now controlling the anti-homeless matrix operations in San Francisco, watched as dozens of police officers manhandled Food Not Bombs volunteers. Police officers on horses rode in and removed soup, 4 or 5 or 6 squad cars, and that is no exaggeration, and paddy wagons. One time we counted 10 or 11. Drove onto the pavement of the Civic Center Plaza in front of City Hall, again, in order to present a show of force to intimidate any homeless people who would be using the Food Not Bombs meals and to frighten Food Not Bombs volunteers. And McHenry, I say again, was jailed, and on the last day of the trial, he was released with apologies, saying that they had indeed raised the bail too high and that he could be released. But at that time, by that time, my trial was over, and the judge refused to send for McHenry while he was in jail, as he has I have a right to have his presence in jail, but the judge has to order him to be present. And Judge Robert Barclay, who heard my case and who will be hearing my case again on Thursday, May 16th, when I go up to San Francisco and at 3 p.m. appear before the judge seeking a modification of my jail sentence, ruled that I could not have the benefit of this key witness. He also made statements to the jury, like, and to the prosecution and defense, that he didn't want the word homeless used during the trial because he felt it was prejudicial. He denied us a number of defenses. He was an unfair judge, and I had an incompetent attorney, so I was in trouble. And the jury found me guilty. I was found guilty of violating a court order that barred Food Not Bombs from serving free food without making all necessary efforts to get required permits. We attempted to have the court order thrown out, and the judge threw out part of the court order but kept part of the court order. And we appealed that snip and paste procedure that Judge Barclay used all the way to the California Supreme Court, which in February of this year, 1996, found that I had to go to jail, that the process that the court used was fine, and that it was time for me to head for the big house. So that's what I'm doing. I'm heading for court in order to appeal. My last appeal, in essence, is to the judge himself who gave me the sentence. And that appeal is going to be based on the fact that the Matrix program is supposedly, by the statement of new Mayor Willie Brown, over in San Francisco. This, of course, is a lie. It's not over. And I was up in San Francisco on May 8th demonstrating with the Coalition on Homelessness and other people, religious witness, other organizations up there, in front of the mayor's temporary office at the Veterans Memorial Building, to show the people of San Francisco, and indeed the people of the world, that Mayor Willie Brown was lying about this, that on February 22nd, that his February 22nd statement, that he was no longer going to arrest people for sleeping, that he was no longer going to arrest people for sitting with a backpack on a park bench, and for other completely victimless, innocent crimes, so-called, was a lie, that he wasn't instituting this policy, and he needed to institute it, and that he damn well better institute it. That was the force of our demonstration. It's kind of ironic, because there have been some really positive moves made by Brown, or I should say by Terrence Hallinan, the district attorney, who's independently elected. Hallinan, about a month ago, and his office dismissed over 38,000 citations under Jordan's Matrix program that had piled up in the last couple of years and gone to warrant. Those were tickets for sleeping and so forth, which were ruled unprosecutable because of lack of evidence. And the clear message was, from Hallinan's office, we are not going to prosecute certain Matrix so-called offenses, because they are essentially enforcement of human rights violations. That's a good sign, and Hallinan himself had been, as I said before, out there on the front lines with Food Not Bombs, wearing a chef's hat and a Food Not Bombs apron on the steps of City Hall, serving hot soup along with me. I would shout, "Hot soup!" and he would serve it. This happened, I think, on at least two occasions, and police, of course, assiduously avoided arresting him, arresting others instead, the 38, 39, 50-odd police that were there at the height of the mayor's repression against Food Not Bombs. It's interesting that the number of police that show up is often extravagantly more than needed. So, for instance, in my last court hearing, which was in the summer of 1995 at the Court of Appeals, we had 9 demonstrators and over 35, I guess it was 32, police officers, and long police lines and barricades set up to deal with the threat of Food Not Bombs. And indeed, I was told that last week, on May 3rd, when I had a hearing scheduled that was continued at the Hall of Justice, there were again police barricades set up. Apparently the police had not yet heard that we were not coming in there because the whole thing had been postponed. That was unfortunate, by the way. We got a hearing before a different judge who we hoped would be more sympathetic because she was a local judge and would have to deal with local flack around San Francisco. The absurdity, the indignity, and the injustice of sending someone to jail for serving free food, and I have a sentence of 2 months that I will have to serve if Barclay doesn't reduce it, would rebound in the local press. But Barclay, the judge who will hear the case, is a visiting judge, and he doesn't have to take it or worry about that. He'll be in his hometown. I think he's up in Modoc County or some such place. Maybe we need to set up a Food Now Bombs up there and check things out. Indeed, judges are the reason Food Now Bombs is not being prosecuted up in Arcata, California, where it's been shown that judges themselves in Arcata are violating the same kind of ordinance, law, or injunction that Food Not Bombs in Arcata is violating by serving food themselves once or twice a month. And I guess it's either some charity situation or some internal court feeding that goes on. And so the whole proceeding has been delayed while that legal confusion, and I think the judges have to recuse themselves, they have to bring in other judges. And so it's a great sideshow at your expense if you're a taxpayer, as almost all of us have to be up there in Arcata. But for those who are trying to get food out to poor people and establish a community center where people come at night to talk and eat and discuss the issues of the day and unite in solidarity around injustices that are happening, it's no fun to have your whole situation being surveilled by the police and to have your main leaders under threat of arrest, as they are in Arcata. They face multiple contempt citations of 5 days each, and that process is being used up there, because if you take someone into custody for contempt of court and you want to want to convict them of that, you don't have to give them a jury trial. You just have to take them before a judge, have a hearing before a judge. If you try to get them for longer than 5 days, then you have to do a jury trial. And I think that up in Arcata, they would have more trouble with a jury trial and getting me or anyone else convicted than they have here in Santa Cruz or in San Francisco. And yes, it has been done in Santa Cruz. Many of the listeners already know this. Two food servers were convicted by jury in 1989. Sandra Loringer, or Sly Shoes Sandy, as I call her, and Brian Flanagan Staley, or Backyard Brian, as he was then known, were convicted for serving with SWAP, soup without a permit, our organization at the town clock that eventually succeeded in establishing the city's own feeding program and established the right to serve free food. It was our resistance that resulted in the toleration and indeed the cooperation to some extent that now exists for groups like Food Not Bombs and Feed the People, who serve downtown almost every evening at Friendship Corner, Cathcart and Pacific in Santa Cruz. So I'm going up on May 16th. A caravan will be leaving Santa Cruz at noon from in front of the City Hall sleepout at 809 Center Street, right across from the library. And you're invited to come. You're invited to borrow a vehicle or buy a vehicle or just come on down without a vehicle and try to grab a ride. We'll see if we can get a few vehicles available. My vehicle isn't available, but I've scrounged one already from selfless volunteer who donates a lot of things to these homeless causes. And we're hoping that we can get you to bring a vehicle. If you have a vehicle, give me a call at 423-4833 and let me know, because I'm trying to keep tabs on how many vehicles we're going to have for those who want to come. If you want to help publicize this effort, give me a call at 423-4833. If you want to write a letter to my judge regarding what you feel are my sterling qualities, similarly, give me a call. Like to talk to you about that. I'm acquiring letters of good character to pass on to Judge Barclay up in San Francisco. So you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is the recorded version. There is no call-in today because the station is still in some chaos and disarray from the moving, which is another story itself. This whole move to another location was precipitated by problems with the Cannabis Collective, which really had divergent purposes. They needed a quieter setting, as did the residents of the house, and Free Radio needed a more kind of freewheeling setting, and there were real problems of lack of consideration by some Free Radio hosts and lack of communication, in my opinion, by the Cannabis Collective. And now the station has moved. And so we are trying again. All of this, I remind our audience, under the threat of a real shutdown possibility from the FCC if the court decision goes against Free Radio Berkeley. We hope to know about this fairly soon, although the longer the delay, the better, as far as I'm concerned. It means more airtime for us. And we'll let people know on the air just what they need to do to defend the station if and when that time comes. Now, what I have for you now are some recordings from the May 8th demonstration in San Francisco against Matrix. It happened around noon on Van Ness Street, right outside the War Memorial Building, where Willie Brown, Slick Willie, has his HQ. It's really a pity that some of this is distorted, and also that the batteries on my tape recorder began to fail, or I should say that my monitoring of the tape recorder was not sufficient, since I did have extra batteries with me. But we do have some tape from that session, and there were a lot of eloquent speakers in this rally, and more important for those concerned with this issue, there was lots of media there, lots of TV media, there was Examiner media, and they weren't too interested in my case, but they were interested in the general issues that the Coalition on Homelessness was raising, and these, of course, are very important issues. I mean, Food Not Bombs right now in San Francisco is not being prosecuted and it is not being arrested. And I think this is a good sign. But my case is still a significant one because it sets a precedent. And frankly, these politicians change their minds with every passing political wind and every passing whim and every new brainstorm from the latest police underling, such as Richard Holder, who's running the operations division of the San Francisco Police Department. In spite of the new liberal chief, you have the same reactionary assholes in positions of power underneath, and they are not being rooted out. Instead, they're being promoted. I think Holder was promoted in this situation. So, it's not a good idea for me to go to jail, also because I know how much you out there in the audience love me, and without seeing my cheery face around town, it wouldn't be the same, would it? So let's listen to the voices of people who are threatened with jail every night in San Francisco for sleeping, as they are here in Santa Cruz. Here in Santa Cruz, we're on the 71st day, and they sleep out at City Hall for basic justice for the homeless around altering the anti-homeless sleeping ban. More about that later. Let's go to San Francisco.
Well, it's May 8th, almost noon here at the new City Hall, which is the War Memorial Veterans Building. Food Not Bombs has set up its table, and the Coalition on Homelessness is about to begin a speak out on the Matrix. And Keith McHenry is serving food, he says, for the first time in some time, at least at this location. So here's a woman with a sign that says, "How can we treat homeless kids like criminals?" What's this all about?
Well, the kids that are hanging out around the hate, they're mostly teenagers, and a lot of them have sad stories, and they're out on the streets because they have no homes, they have no place to go, and they're being treated as if that's a criminal offense, and it's not. I mean, they just don't have homes. They can't sleep, they can't drink, they can't do anything in public, but they don't have anywhere in private to do it, so I feel that that's not just.
And are you from the hate yourself?
Yeah, I live on Schrader Street. A lot of these kids, in fact, almost everybody in this picture slept in front of my house for a period of about 4 months. I was letting them sleep in front of my house, and they ended up arresting me for that.
Uh-huh. And what basis did they arrest you? What was the charge?
Maintaining a public nuisance. So I'm writing a book, and I'm calling it Maintaining a Public Nuisance. I decided that's my job now.
What's your name?
Patricia.
Your last name?
Vesti.
Patricia, have you beat this case in court? Or
yeah, the charges were dropped, and they've busted me twice since just for being in the park after 10 o'clock, and those charges are always dropped too. But the police, if they see me in the park after 10 o'clock, even if I say I'm a legal observer, they still give me tickets just to harass me, so I have to go down to Bryant Street and fight it.
Now, are tickets given homeless people also dropped?
Yeah, there were 39,000 were just dismissed, and yet they continue to write them, and those will all be dismissed too.
Have tickets in March and April been dismissed, or only those?
No, up through February something, I think. You'd have to ask Judy from the Coalition, or somebody from the Coalition, to know exactly the date, but I think it was from September through some date in February.
So you're with the Coalition on Homelessness, or this is another group?
Well, I just sort of did this on my own and then hooked up with the Coalition because they were the organizers, and I sort of, like, when I hear about something happening, I'll tell them. I'm kind of their man in the hate, or their woman in the hate, or on the front lines, because I'm right on the front lines. I'm a block from the park, so I find out about things sometimes before they do, so I let them know.
Do you have a phone number you can be reached at?
Yes, the 386-5530.
386-5530.
Okay.
Don't keep that number.
Give it to people that you think have legit.
Keep that number confidential.
Yeah, okay, please. Not on the radio.
Now, there's been a change in the park codes in the hate, right? In the hate, there has been a situation where the park department, without going through the Board of Supervisors, has changed the law regarding the right of people to sit down on the street, in spite of the fact that the San Francisco voters did not pass an initiative which would have made it criminal to sit on the streets, right?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if that thing to sit on the streets came through the park department. I'm not sure where that came from, but it is the city. What the park did was made it illegal to be in the park after 10 o'clock at night. I was at the hearing where they did that. But I don't know that they have anything to do with the street. That must have come from some city department.
I was told it was the police commission that reinterpreted a rule which allows them now to walk along Haight Street rounding up people. Is that a concern of yours in the Haight?
Yeah, it's terrible. And they distributed all these signs that say no trespassing, and all the merchants have them in their windows. So if somebody's even got their backpack leaning against one of those buildings, they call it trespassing and give them a ticket for it.
And so is this a change, let's say, from a year ago?
Well, this all started in, first there was the first stage of Matrix, which was down here, and then the second stage of Matrix started in September.
You're talking about 93?
95. Yeah, the second stage of Matrix started in September 95.
Is that when they started clearing, about the time they started clearing out the parks and curfew?
That's when they started clearing out the parks,
So this, what about this new program in the Haight? Is this actually, does it predate the Brown administration, the business? Not the parks, but I'm talking about along the street.
I'm not sure about this. That along the street thing has been in existence since 95, because that started in 95. That's when those signs went up. I think it was maybe about a month or 6 weeks after Matrix 2 started, those signs came up.
Now you have a newspaper in the Haight that's Haight-Ashbury Free Press or some such thing?
Well, the Haight-Ashbury Neighborhood Council has a newsletter. The Haight-Ashbury Free Press doesn't really come out with a paper anymore. They're just on the web.
I see. Is there much organizing against this practice other than you as a courageous individual?
Yeah. Hank newsletter this month, in fact, has an article about this protest and the commission. There's this, which I brought for Judy, but if you call me, I can get you a copy of this.
Let me get some back issues. Let me give you my address.
Casper.
And Casper, you're talking about the trespassing situation and the Haight trespassing signs?
Most of those trespassing signs have a date and a signature on the bottom of them, and most of them are expired, and people still are getting tickets for those.
And you yourself, have you been experiencing this up in the Haight?
I've been experiencing this trespassing, but since then I don't sit for trespassing signs.
I see.
Yeah.
Where are you? You're outside?
Yeah, I'm outside. I'm homeless.
And how long have you been in San Francisco?
6 months. Yeah, 6 months.
And has the situation changed under Willie Brown?
No.
No change? Has it gotten worse?
Pretty much worse. I mean, every day the cops just stand in the park for about 3 hours, just in front of the park, and they go to the drum circle on Sundays, and push, they just make themselves be felt here. And I mean, I think, if the people, if somebody wanted to chase the homeless out to get more tourists to go in, which the homeless don't bother, but if they really want more tourists to go in, they shouldn't show cops all around, because when you see cops for a tourist, it means it's a bad area. So I don't think they would get that many more tourists out of chasing the homeless.
So you think it's closed? It doesn't produce tourism. It doesn't increase the tourism scene.
No, I don't think it is. I don't think it will either, because, you know, they're not getting anything out of the park cops. I mean, you know, if they stand there, I mean, obviously, if somebody wanted to commit a crime, they wouldn't commit it in front of the cops. So they'll just go somewhere else and do it, but that doesn't matter, it's still there. You know, it's not by putting the cops in the front of the park with three paddy wagons, about five motorcycles and horses every 5 minutes that it's going to change anything. If somebody really wanted to, you know.
Have you been ticketed recently yourself?
Huh?
Have you been ticketed recently yourself?
No, because I try to keep myself out of it. I've been lucky. But I, you know, this morning I got woken up by some bicycles up, but they didn't ticket me because I told them that I had the permission of the tenants to sleep there.
But they hassled you anyway.
They still woke me up and told me to move on.
Right. Well, it's too bad the media is talking to you. There's some cameras over there. Supposedly Willie Brown has ended this practice, but in fact he is not, right?
He has not. Not at all.
So this is all sort of a PR move by Willie Brown. In fact, he continues to enforce the Matrix even as heavily as it was enforced before.
I think he should, like, do some things for the cops to get penalties as much as we are getting penalties for not committing a crime, just sleeping.
So you think this is a Brown move, or is this a move from the police department?
I think this is a move from the police department, besides what Brown said. I mean, it looks like they don't even care about what he's saying.
So the police department is out of Brown's control? Is that the point?
I think so. I hear about violence every day, and
we should volunteer to take over the police department.
Yeah, that should be doing. I mean, I thought that the police were supposed to protect people, no matter what their race was, no matter what their, you know, their social statute is, but I don't think they're doing a good job at it, you know, because I've seen more violence created by the cops than there is actually in the streets. That's my opinion.
I'm going to go up to Brown's office today and see what he has to say about this.
Yeah.
That'd be a good idea.
Thank you.
It's about 12:12, and the media is still here, ABC. We've got at least video cameras, five or six or seven. Not too many police people in evidence, although there are three vans, kind of two vans and a car double parked on the curb side there, near the curb. We have about a crowd of, I don't know, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 people here.